welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm Laura Zara-Klapinski. This week I'm featuring one of my favorite bookish destinations, Green Gables Heritage Place on Prince Edward Island. This is a site that will delight fellow Anne of Green Gables fans. Today I'm excited to welcome Emma Hustis, Operations Supervisor at Green Gables Heritage Place. Welcome, Emma.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, so I'm excited to recommend Green Gables Heritage Place to listeners. It is one of my favorite bookish destinations. For people who have not been there yet, can you tell us a little bit about the site and what your role is there?
Yes, absolutely. So this is my fourth season working at Green Gables. I'm the operations supervisor, so basically, I'm in charge of bookings with commercial groups and all the things that happen in the run of a day here. And we have quite a few things to offer visitors, and we're very excited this year since we just completed a new redevelopment for our site. So now we have a new visitor center up front that will house many new exhibits about Lucy Vaughn Montgomery, the author of Anne of Green Gables, and it will really help visitors to leave with a newfound understanding of the author's work and kind of her inspiration and her process when she was writing the novels. In addition to the new visitor center, we also have a collection of barns on site. Unfortunately, they're not original to the time period because the original barns fell into disrepair in the 1940s, but they are exact replicas. They're the exact same size. And then, of course, we have the Green Gables house, which is the original house that the author would have visited during her lifetime.
And in terms of L.M. Montgomery's connections and visits there, could you tell us a little bit about sort of the history of the house and its relationship to her, her family and her growing up?
Yes, of course. So Lucy Vaughn Montgomery grew up in Cavendish in Prince Edward Island, and she was raised by her maternal grandparents. Now, she never lived at the house that is on our site, but it belonged to cousins of her grandparents, and she grew up about a kilometer down the road from here. So she visited the property quite frequently as a young girl and used this property as the inspiration for her descriptions of the Green Gables farm in the books. The house itself here was built by David McNeil, one of the first McNeils to settle in Cavendish in 1831. And the owners of the house during the author's lifetime would have been his children, David Jr. and his sister, Margaret McNeil. Now, they added on to the house in the 1870s. They added on the whole south side of the home, which includes the parlor, the dining room, and the upstairs bedrooms. And then neither one of them ended up getting married or having children. So then their niece, Myrtle, and her husband, Ernest Webb, took over the farm and added on a few bedrooms upstairs in the 1920s. But those ones are closed to the public since they didn't exist during the author's lifetime.
Yeah, I always think it's so exciting to sort of see the setting of a book come alive. And this Green Gables Heritage Place definitely does that. And I think it's wonderful. I visited a few years ago, maybe in 2015. And I'm already talking, I would really love to bring my daughter back there. She's only a toddler, so I'm waiting for her to maybe be old enough. But it's such a wonderful place for Anne of Green Gables fans to visit and maybe plan. I know when I went, I did sort of a whole Anne of Green Gables pilgrimage to all the different sites. So for people who maybe are big Anne fans, I know you mentioned that some of the book was sort of inspired by this setting. Could you talk a little bit about certain aspects of the property that sort of show up in the novel?
Absolutely. Well, the house itself is lovingly furnished, just as it's described in the book. All of the artifacts are original to the Victorian era, about the late 1800s when the book was written, where it was set. And it's when you walk in the door, you just feel like you're immersed in Anne's world. We also have two trails on site, the Lover's Lane Trail and the Haunted Woods Trail. And those are both things that are mentioned in the book, and they were real places in the author's lifetime as well. The Lover's Lane Trail would have been the cow path that they used to take the cows out to pasture, but the author had much of the same romantic imagination that Anne Shirley herself had. So she liked to call it Lover's Lane. And the haunted woods is the woods that separated this property from her grandparents' property where she grew up. And her grandparents used to board two young boys during the summertime at their home. And those boys would tell Lucy Maud Montgomery all kinds of scary stories about those woods. And so she believed from a young age that they were haunted. And that's why she included them in her book.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, you definitely, one of my, I think, highlights from the whole Prince Edward Island trip was walking Lover's Lane. And you really do just, I think, feel the author's presence and just get that Anne spirit there, which I think is mm-hmm. so lovely. Are there any particular artifacts or displays inside that you would want to highlight?
Yes, absolutely. One of our most prized artifacts that we have here is the typewriter that Lucy Maud Montgomery used to write all of her novels. It's the only artifact or one of the only artifacts on our site that is original to her, that belonged to her. And it's quite something to see. You can tell how often it was used. You can't even read some of the letters on the keys. Like I think the letter E and the letter A, they were used so much that the paint is worn right off the top of it. So we're definitely very proud to have an artifact like that on site. We also have a very special stove. It was called the New Waterloo Number 2. And it's the exact model that was mentioned in the book. It wouldn't have been original to the home here, and it wouldn't have really been typical of a lower to middle class farming family at the time. But the author's paternal grandfather was a senator, and he had a little bit more money than the typical family in the area, so he could afford a stove like the new Waterloo Number 2. And so we've acquired it for our site. It was patented in 1876, and it was actually patented in Sackville, New Brunswick, which is not too far from PEI. And it's very unique because the stove has something called a peekaboo oven. So the oven is up on top of the cooktop, and there's two doors, one on either side, so you could look straight through it. And the way it's set up now in the home, if you were to come visit Green Gables, is as a smoker. So they could have smoked meats and cheeses and things like that in it. And then they had a ceramic or a metal liner that would have gone inside if they were baking bread and things like that that they didn't want to smoke.
Now, you know, as you're mentioning acquiring different artifacts, I was just curious, at what point did Green Gables Heritage Place transition to something open to the public? And I'm sure it was quite the undertaking to, you know, have it look just like the novel and, you know, acquire different artifacts. What was that process
well,
like?
The house itself and the property that it sits on was acquired by the Government of Canada in 1937 when they established the National Park in Prince Edward Island. And it wasn't really run like the house it is today back then. Actually, my grandmother worked here in the 60s, and it was the clubhouse for a golf course. Oh, wow. So you could drive right up to the front door, and she'd make sandwiches and in the kitchen of the house for the golfers, and they had a little gift shop. And then as the years progressed, it started to become more of a museum like it is today, and it was very much a community effort to gather a lot of the artifacts that we have in the home, since they are all original to Prince Edward Island. And there's a lot of older homes in the area that existed during the author's lifetime that would have still had a lot of these old antiques that suit the time period and suit the feel of the house. So I've heard that it was a community effort to collect all of these artifacts from across the island.
That's great. And I'm sure it must be rewarding working there. I know when I went, it felt like this pilgrimage that I had finally made it there, and like definitely felt, you know, the author's presence there, and it was just such a magical experience. Do you see like so many families and just people coming who love the book? And I'm sure there's people coming from all
absolutely.
Over.
Absolutely. I've met visitors from all over the world, and it's such a rewarding place to work because you get to see so many people's dreams come true. There's so many diehard Anne fans out there, and I see multiple people every summer cry when they come to the house because they're just so overcome with emotion that their dream is finally coming true. And you can feel Anne's spirit and the author's spirit, like you were saying earlier, it just is overwhelming for so many people. And I love being surrounded by that atmosphere. Everyone's always happy when they come visit Green Gables.
Oh, that's so nice. Well, I was wondering too, are there any particular highlights for kids visiting Heritage Place or like annual events and things that families would want to
certainly
visit for?
Well, we have a wide range of interpretive programs that run during our peak season in July and August, and many of them are targeted towards families. For example, we have Field Day with Miss Stacy. It's one of my favorite programs. It runs a few times a week, and Miss Stacy will take the kids or adults. We welcome everyone to participate around the site on a little field day. And participated in the book, and you learn about the trees and flowers on site, and it wraps up with a little bit of games and races at the end. And we also have a similar program, Sunday Picnic, where visitors and the characters make ice cream together by hand, the old-fashioned way, and they have games and races for the kids. It's really an incredible program. You truly feel like you're immersed in the culture of Avonlea.
Oh, I love that. I wanna bring my daughter to both of those someday. Well, you know, the other thing I was wondering, if people do plan their trip here, people who are sort of hoping to make an Anne of Green Gables pilgrimage. I know there's lots of different sites. Is there any other place you would recommend that you love going besides Heritage Place that has that Anne of Green Gables
actually,
feel?
One site I would definitely recommend for diehard Anne fans to visit is our sister site, which is the Cavendish home of Lucy Vaughn Montgomery. And they actually help us make up the whole Lucy Vaughn Montgomery's Cavendish National Historic Site, where the Green Gables Heritage Place were only half of it. The other half is just across the Haunted Woods. We're connected by the Haunted Woods Trail, and they have the foundation of the home where the author grew up, and it's run by her descendants. Since the house isn't there, they do have a little bookstore on site with a few artifacts. The author helped her grandparents run the community post office out of their kitchen, and so they have the little post office desk there. And a few other artifacts that are original to the home.
Oh, awesome. That would be nice to check out as well. And I think even just for me, in addition to all the sites, just getting to experience all that natural beauty of Prince Edward Island that is written about so much in the books is such a wonderful part of any trip there. And I'm the more we talk about it, the more I'm longing to go back. And I was wondering too, have you at sort of what your history with Anne of Green Gables is, and if you've always
been a huge fan of Anne of Green Gables, and I've been reading all of Lucy Maud Montgomery's books since I was a young girl. Actually, it was something that my grandmother and I bonded over, since she used to work at the house back when she first graduated from high school. She had a few first edition prints of Anne of Green Gables and I think Magic for Marigold, and she used to read them to me before I went to sleep when I'd sleep over at her house. And her and I are actually related to the author distantly, but still related. And so I've always had a special connection to the site here.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's awesome. Is Anne of Green Gables your favorite of all her books, or do you have
Anne of Green Gables
favorite?
Is definitely a classic for me, but I'd have to say one of my favorites is The Blue Castle. And it's interesting. It's the only one of Lucy Maud Montgomery's books that isn't set in Prince Edward Island. It's set in the Muskoka region of Ontario. And for me, it's kind of like the original romantic comedy. It's such a funny book, and it kind of shows her more playful side of things. And it's written about a young woman who would have been a bit older than some of her other characters. Her other characters were usually young girls, like Anne was 11 in Magic for Marigold. Marigold's a young girl. But the main character in The Blue Castle is probably in her early or late 20s, and it's all about her adventures. She accidentally gets news that she's going to die from her doctor. And so it's all about her trying to make the most of her last few days. And then she ends up finding out that it was all a mistake. So it definitely sounds like a romantic comedy.
Yeah, I think Anne of Green Gables fans will definitely want to check that out. And actually, one other thing I was thinking about, as I have sort of visited some of the sites and read more about Ellen Montgomery, there's been lots of surprises. And I'm curious, from your perspective, is there anything that you think visitors are sort of most surprised to learn about her life, or about maybe the connection between her and the book?
That's a good question. I think one thing that many people are surprised by is how old she was when she finally reached her fame. She was born in 1874, and she spent a lot of her early years writing. She started keeping a journal from the time she was 9 years old, and her first work to be published was when she was 15 years old in a magazine. But she didn't really get her footing or publish anything until Anne of Green Gables, which was written in 1905. And she did struggle a lot to get it published. She sent it away in 1905 to numerous different publishers, and all of them rejected it with much the same message, that it was a nice story, but they didn't think it would really go anywhere and didn't really think it would connect to many people. Because at the time, you have to remember, she was a woman writing a book about a young girl. So at the time, that wasn't really something that the men in the publishing industry thought would be appealing to people. So she got very discouraged and put her manuscript away in an old hat box and shoved it to the back of her closet. And then 3 years later, in 1908, she came across the manuscript during some spring cleaning and read it again and thought, you know what? I really like the story. I'm going to give it one last chance. And that's when she sent it away to the L.C. Page Company in Boston, and they decided to print her book. And I think it sold about 19,000 copies in the first 5 months of printing. So it clearly was a success right from the beginning.
Oh, I love her proving everyone wrong. And I forgot about the Boston connection. I'm in the Boston area, and I remember reading that was the where she finally got published, or where the publisher was. So that's a fun connection. You know, as people are learning more about her, do you have any favorite Ella Montgomery related like nonfiction or biographies you'd recommend?
That's a good question as well. She published her own autobiography called The Alpine Path, and it's not an awfully long book, but it definitely gives a good overview of her life. And there have been a number of other ones published. Lots of people love to write about her life. I'd also recommend her journals for people who are looking into kind of a nonfiction look into her life. She started, as I mentioned earlier, started writing in a journal from the age of 9, and she continued all the way up until her death in 1942. And you can really get a good glimpse of what life was like in the late 1800s in Cavendish and Prince Edward Island. And it's really special for me to read because all the places she's mentioning are still here. They're parts of the national park, and they're places that I drive by every day on my way to work. And so you can really picture what life was like, what she would have been like riding the buggy to church on Sundays and things like that. And it also gives you a glimpse into kind of how she grew up through the years. I haven't read all of her journals, but I started reading right from the beginning, and you can read them right until she's up to my age in her 20s, when she was starting to teach in different communities around the island, and when she had her first love, and when she experienced her father's death, and all these different monumental moments in her life. It makes her much more relatable because they're things that we all experience as well.
That's great. And yeah, it must be so special to be living and having grown up in the same area where the books are set, especially, you know, in some books, maybe the setting isn't quite so important, but Prince Edward Island and Cavendish is so at the heart of the story that I just think that must be, I'm a little jealous that you got to grow up there and experience that. That's very cool. Well, I guess just to end, I always love to hear, you know, what guests have been reading lately. So it doesn't have to be Ellen Montgomery related, but it can be. Are there any books you've read lately?
I just reread one of my favorite books, Jane Eyre, last month. And I always have to recommend that one to people. I know it's a classic, and most people have probably read it, but it's definitely one of my favorites up there with a lot of Lucy Maud Montgomery's works.
I'm a big Jane Eyre fan as well. And actually, I want to say, I forget who, there's supposedly a very good Audible version of Jane Eyre. I'm forgetting who the narrator is, but that might be worth checking out if people are interested to maybe listen to Jane Eyre. That would be fun as well. Well, I hope that people can plan a trip to PEI and go check out Green Gables Heritage Place. I know it is high on my list of bookish destinations to get back to. Thank you for sharing some more about it with us. I appreciate it. If you are an Anne of Green Gables fan, I hope you're inspired to plan a trip to Green Gables Heritage Place. You can find links to that site and to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode at abookishhome.com. If you've not yet subscribed to the podcast, please take a moment to do that in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have a moment to rate or review, that would be so helpful. You can also follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at abookishhome. Thanks for listening and happy reading!